Welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre for the Sightloss community. Unfortunately, due to the unprecedented impact of COVID-19 and updated government guidance, Talking News currently cannot be distributed in CD format. The health and safety of our staff, volunteers and listeners is our main priority, and therefore we have taken the difficult decision not to distribute CDs to our loyal listeners until further notice and safe to do so. We are sorry for any inconvenience caused during this time. We are pleased to inform you that the Talking News service is continuing as an online podcast. This will be available via our website each week. The direct link can be found on our social media pages. You can also stream our Talking News service on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the British Wireless for the Blind application, and on the podcast section of the Black Country Radio website. Simply search for Beacon Black Country Talking News and subscribe to the podcast. Whilst the coronavirus pandemic continues, we will not be reporting on any community or sporting events due to cancellations and postponements. Thank you for bearing with us at this challenging time. Hello. This week's edition of the Black Country Talking News is for the 27th of May 2020, with me, Simon, Christine, Pete, Mina, Ian, Sophie, Steve, Roger and Angela. This week we have a roundup of local news, our weekly quiz. We'll hear from Queen's Cross Network in Dudley, our weekly talking book review. In our Sightloss section, we'll have a look at blind football. On This Week in History, in our flashback section, a feature on the Goodyear airship Europa that was often seen in Black Country skies, the weather for the weekend and next week, an update from Beacon, plus a brain teaser to get you thinking. Now, we set you a brain teaser last week. Did you get it? And to reveal the answer, here's Pete.
Every day, Farmer Jones has two eggs for his breakfast, but he does not keep chickens. No one gives him the eggs, and he does not buy, beg, borrow, or steal them. How does he manage to have two eggs for breakfast every day? So every day Farmer Jones has two eggs for his breakfast, but he does not keep chickens. No one gives him the eggs, and he does not buy, beg, borrow, or steal them. So how does he manage to have two eggs for breakfast every day? Well, he keeps ducks, doesn't he? That's the answer. He keeps ducks.
Ah, ducks. Of course it is. Another brain teaser coming up at the end of this week's edition. But let's start off with some local news now with Ian and Angela. But first up, it's Christine.
A huge new housing estate plan has been revived years after concerns were first raised. Houses have been earmarked for land at Birmingham New Road and Sedgley Road West on the border of Coseley and Tipton on the old Newey Business Park and Bean Foundry site. The development would see old industrial buildings being demolished to make way for the new properties. The latest plans are part of an original scheme for 925 homes which were given outline planning permission in March 2016 by Dudley Council. That scheme has now been scaled back after it was decided the Wellington and Bean Road industrial estates will be retained for commercial use. Since 2016, the plan's proposers and planning officers have worked to address the impact on neighbouring homes and businesses. But in a report to councillors, planning officers have said they are satisfied these fears have been addressed.
Council bosses in Dudley have warned people not to risk putting more pressure on the NHS during the coronavirus pandemic. Every year, around 400 people on average die in the United Kingdom from drowning, with thousands more rescued but left with permanent and life-changing injuries. Open water is normally colder and deeper than swimming pools and can induce shock and panic for people inexperienced in swimming in such waters. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, said, "Open water swimming can be extremely dangerous and a risk to life. If things do go wrong, there is often no one around to help until it is too late. While there is no law against it in this country, we would urge people to be sensible and avoid swimming in quarries, canals, lakes, reservoirs or rivers. Our NHS and emergency services have enough on their plates as it is fighting the coronavirus, and we need to protect them so that we can save the lives of our loved ones." The Royal Life Saving Society UK, British Triathlon and Swim England all recommend newcomers to open water swimming to only use operated and supervised venues with safety crews present. Many of those are currently closed due to the coronavirus pandemic.
Last week we featured a story about a motorist caught travelling at 142 miles an hour on the M6. This week, a motorist was spotted driving 114 miles an hour on the M6 in the West Midlands, say police. The driver was followed by Central Motorway Policing Group officers in an unmarked patrol car between junctions 11 for Cannock and 10 for Walsall and Wolverhampton. Officers say the driver has been reported and will be receiving a summons to court.
Water firm Severn Trent has warned the coronavirus crisis is likely to lead to unpaid household water bills over the next year and a decline in sales to businesses. The company, which serves millions of people across the Midlands and Mid Wales, said it has stepped up support for customers that need extra help with their bills. It comes as Severn Trent saw its turnover jump during its latest financial year, with pre-tax profits also rising. Liv Garfield, chief executive of Severn Trent, said, "Operationally, this has been another year where we have delivered for all of our stakeholders. However, the last few weeks have been extraordinary, not only for our business, but for the country. We know that this is a difficult time for our customers, and I am incredibly proud of the ways in which the business has responded. We also understand that for many people, this will be a difficult time financially, and we've stepped up our support for those on our priority services register and customers that need extra help with their bills. Our business remains strong, and we've made further progress against the things that really matter to our customers, with leakage, supply interruptions, and water quality complaints all improving. We have invested £3 billion in our long-term future over the past 5 years and are now very focused on emerging from this crisis in the best possible shape to deliver against the exciting plans we have set out for the next 5 years."
Wolves' plan to take Molyneux's capacity above 32,000 has been given the green light by the City Council. The club had submitted a planning application for a new temporary 500-seat stand at the ground, filling in the corner between the Sir Jack Haywood and Steve Bull stands. And Wolverhampton Council have now given it their approval, with work required to commence within the next 3 years. In an ideal world, Wolves would have liked the work to have been done in time for next season. But all the uncertainty offered up by the coronavirus pandemic means there is no set date as to when work will start. The development, though, is set to see the existing video wall in the south-east corner of the ground taken down, with a new one being placed behind an uncovered stand. The finished product will be similar to the existing Graham Hughes stand in the south-west corner, albeit a bit smaller, as that holds around 800. Also, as part of incorporating the new stand, turnstile block 5 will be demolished and replaced with more unmanned automatic turnstiles to improve the entry rate. Men's and women's toilet blocks are included in the plans as well, along with a catering unit, while the new video wall will be 1.5 metres taller than the current one. Wolves' long-term vision of a 50,000-seat Molyneux is still in place, but this is seen as a way to house more supporters in the meantime. Club director John Gough told The Athletic earlier this month that Wolves are staying at Molyneux as it is a vital part of the city's regeneration. He also said the club are looking at increasing the capacity in a more cautious manner, as the priority is investing in the squad.
Universities are planning to reopen student campuses from next month as they start to adapt to life after the coronavirus pandemic. Senior leaders across the region are mapping out plans for the safe return of students, including smaller class sizes and more lectures available online. Universities in the West Midlands say they are prioritising student and staff safety and will await government guidance before making final decisions on reopening campuses and halls of residence. The University of Wolverhampton says it plans to offer all students a full digital suite of course material, including recorded lectures and learning resources. On plans to reopen campuses, Vice-Chancellor Jeff Layer said, "We'll be looking at a gradual return to certain buildings being open, and we will develop a plan which prioritises parts can be open first. It won't be we're all back. Social distancing has to be part of what we do, so I'd imagine we would be opening selected spaces over time."
Thanks, Angela. More local news to follow, but now here's Mina with this week's quiz.
Are you ready to be tested again on events that happened on this week in history? Okay, you will find the answers in our flashback section coming up later in this week's Black Country Talking News. Here we go. Question 1. What movie came out in May 1977, heralding a new series of worldwide space epics? Question 2. What was the name of famous operation made up of British small ships which went to Dunkirk to evacuate our troops in 1940? Question 3. In what year was the Beatles album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band released? Question 4. In 1878, a comic opera by Gilbert and Sullivan premiered in London. Can you name the ship in the opera's title? Question 5. What was the title of Bing Crosby's famous Yuletide song that he made in 1942? And finally, question 6. In what year were DVDs first unveiled in America? Keep listening for the answers. If you miss them, we'll let you know all the answers at the end of this week's edition. Good luck!
Thanks, Mina. But now, with more local news, it's Ian.
Every resident in care homes across the Black Country has been either tested for coronavirus or will be tested in the coming days, after proactive swabbing began a few weeks ago. Health partners in the region have led the way in rolling out proactive swabbing in local care homes, whether or not individuals have symptoms of COVID-19, such as a high temperature, a new continuous cough, or a loss or change to your sense of smell or taste. Proactive swabbing of residents got underway in the most high-risk settings last month, before being rolled out to all local care homes a short time later. All staff members have been offered the test. In total, around 7,500 people living in 274 care homes across Wolverhampton, Dudley, Sandwell and Walsall are being tested. Proactive testing will be repeated on a routine basis going forward. Speaking on behalf of the four Black Country Directors of Public Health, Lisa McNally from Sandwell, Bal Kaur from Dudley and Stephen Gunter from Walsall, Wolverhampton's Director of Public Health, John Denley, said, "People living in our care homes are among the most vulnerable people in society, and we want to do all we can to protect them. And the care staff who are working tirelessly to keep them safe during this national emergency." Proactive swabbing in our region's care homes is playing an important part in our drive to identify and treat cases of coronavirus at an earlier stage, and is helping reduce the risk of outbreaks in our care homes as much as possible. Through this work, we've been able to identify a number of cases and to support care providers to manage them more appropriately. What is perhaps worth noting is that COVID-19 does not seem to be as endemic in our region's care homes as may otherwise have been perceived. And that's testament to the hard work of care staff and the stringent infection control measures our homes have put in place to help prevent the spread of the virus.
Dudley Leisure Centre joined a number of council buildings when it was lit up in honour of NHS staff and carers fighting on the front line against coronavirus. Leisure Centre staff added blue and green lighting to the Wellington Road building. The blue represents NHS workers, while the green is for social care staff, care providers, local government staff and those in the voluntary sector. It marked another night of tributes to the NHS and care staff, which saw people clapping on their doorsteps. Councillor Kettle, Cabinet Member responsible for leisure centres, said, "The NHS and care staff have gone to incredible lengths during this pandemic, and it is only right we take every opportunity to show our appreciation." The Council House in Dudley and Himley Hall have also been bathed in green and blue in recent weeks, as a tribute to incredible staff.
Dudley Zoo is losing £50,000 a week while being closed amid the coronavirus crisis, with bosses admitting they will have to put plans for an £800,000 new enclosure on hold. Zoo director Derek Grove said even when the well-known Castle Hill attraction opens, it will have to limit visitors to a fifth of what it could hold at peak times. Over the bank holiday, the zoo and castle could expect 5,000 people through its famous gates, especially with the Black Country basking in warm and sunny weather. But Mr. Groves said staff would have to restrict visitors to 1,000 when it reopens, and staff are keeping their fingers crossed that it will come by the middle of the summer. Losses have impacted on the zoo's plans for a new orangutan enclosure amid a £2.2 million scheme to bring other improvements to the 40-acre site. The attraction has been unable to furlough all its staff due to animals needing daily care, in contrast to many other closed tourist destinations.
Parks and cemeteries in a Black Country borough are now operating with longer opening times. The changes have been brought in at Wolverhampton after safety assessments were carried out by the council. From now, West Park, Bantock Park and East Park will open each day from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m, 7 days a week. All cemeteries, except for Bushbury and Danes Court, will open from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday to Friday. Bushbury and Danes Court cemeteries will open from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday to Friday. Cemeteries will close for funerals to take place, which will affect opening times. Councillor Steve Evans, Cabinet Member for Environment, said, "We've assessed the safety aspects and in line with government guidance, we're now able to make adjustments and extend the visiting times at cemeteries for the public."
Plans for 9 flats on Stourbridge High Street have led to objections from a popular music venue and its supporters, who fear future residents will complain of noise nuisance. The Claptrap Bar in Stourbridge is opposing converting a former cooperative store into homes, saying it will have a negative impact on the town's nightlife. The bar's objections have been supported by a petition asking Dudley Council to reject the scheme. Developers are asking for approval to convert part of the ground and first floor of the former store to create 3 one-bedroom and 6 two-bedroom flats. The former store faces onto Stourbridge High Street and the development would run parallel to the venue, which is only metres away. The bar and 86 Music fans have lodged formal objections saying there is no demand for residential apartments in the town centre, claiming they will be too close to the live music venue and residents will suffer disturbance from performing bands. They have also submitted a petition of 147 signatures stating there is no desire for residential units as proposed in this application, which does not consciously consider the effect proposals will have on nearby businesses. And we, the undersigned, ask Dudley Council to object. But planning officers have recommended the scheme is approved, saying it is considered that the proposed development is acceptable in terms of scale, size and appearance and would not have a detrimental impact on surrounding amenities and the street scene, nor raise any highway safety issues, and its compliance with adopted core strategy policies, development strategy policies and the Stourbridge Area Action Plan. Councillors on Dudley Council's Planning Committee will have made a decision at their meeting on May 26th.
Reduced council tax bills will be sent out to low-income households in the Dudley Borough over the next few weeks as part of a £3 million help package. The government has made cash available to reduce council tax bills for eligible people as part of its £500 million hardship fund. It aims to provide council tax relief to help vulnerable people and households most affected by coronavirus. Reduced council tax bills will be issued to around 14,000 eligible residents in the next few weeks. Eligible people will see their bills reduced by up to £150 for this financial year and includes those working age people who have already had their bills reduced by an award of council tax reduction, CTR, or for those of working age being awarded CTR for the first time. Councillor Steve Clark, Cabinet Member for Finance, said, "The coronavirus is having a massive effect on people both on their health and their finances. This financial support will go to the people who need it most and will be a welcome piece of good news during what are very worrying times. The bills of those people eligible for the reduction will be calculated automatically.
As well as the services Beacon offers for people with sight loss, residents of Dudley Borough can also access additional help. So let's introduce Paul from Dudley Adult Social Care.
Hello everyone, my name is Paul Astley and I work at Queen's Cross Network. Queen's Cross is a vibrant and busy community-based hub in Wellington Road, Dudley. The hub provides support to people who have a physical and sensory disability and who live in the Dudley Borough. This covers the areas of Central Dudley, Sedgeley, Coesley, Briley Hill, Kings Winford, Wordsley, Stourbridge and Hales Owen. At the current time, the hub at Queen's Cross is closed to attendees and visitors owing to the COVID-19 lockdown situation. However, we are offering a service called the Pleased to Meet You helpline. This is a friendly support helpline aimed at helping people who live in the borough and who may need some support with shopping, medication, access to some other support services such as fall prevention and telecare, or if people are just feeling lonely and isolated and need someone to talk to. They can talk to us, of course. To give you an example of some of the other things we can help with, we have helped people to contact someone who could repair household appliances like washing machines if they break down, or maybe even help to contact a dog walker for pet care. Whatever the request, if we can reasonably help, we will try our very best to do so. If you feel our team of adult social care staff could help you in any way, then you can call the Pleased to Meet You helpline on 01384 812761. That's 01384 812761. Or you can email us at communitysupportserve@dudley.gov.uk. That's communitysupportserve@dudley.gov.uk. There is no E at the end of the word serve. communitysupportserve@dudley.gov.uk. The Pleased to Meet You helpline is open Monday to Friday from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. We would like to hear from you. In fact, you could say we'd be pleased to meet you. If you'd like to know more about services that we offer at Queen's Cross Network, please visit www.dudley.gov.uk and search for Queen's Cross Network. Or you can Google Queen's Cross Network Dudley. Alternatively, if you use Twitter, you can search hashtag Queen's Cross Network, or one word, and learn about the exciting things we offer to people who have a physical and sensory disability at our fantastic centre. You can contact Queen's Cross Network through the Pleased to Meet You helpline or by calling 01384 813460. That's 01384 813460. Thank you for listening. My name's Paul Astley, and from everyone at Queen's Cross Network, I wish you all well and hope that you will stay safe.
Thanks, Paul. And later on in this week's Black Country Talking News, we'll have our regular weekly update from Beacon, but now more local news with Angela.
A petition has been launched over controversial plans to build a 5G mast outside a Grade 2 listed mansion. The proposal will see a 20-metre tall phone mast installed outside the 17th century Woolerscote Hall in Stevens Park in Woolerscote, between Stourbridge and Hales Owen. Councillor Tim Crumpton, who launched the petition, argues this would destroy the amenity of the area and has called for the plans to be withdrawn. A planning application has been made on behalf of the government, which wants the West Midlands to become the UK's first large-scale test bed for 5G, according to planning documents. Councillor Crumpton, who represents Cradley and Woolerscote, said the mast would be erected slap bang in front of Woolerscote's Hall. This would completely destroy what it is, in my opinion and in many others, the most beautiful sight we have when looking at the hall and its wonderful gardens, he said. We must fight this. the plans have been labelled with a special status called a permitted development, which means they are granted planning approval without the need to submit a planning application, said Councillor Crumpton. However, a spokesman for Dudley Council, which is the planning authority, said the plans have not yet been rubber stamped. Councillor Ian Kettle, Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Enterprise, said, "We are currently assessing an application for a new 5G mast near to Woolscote Hall. No decision on this application will be made until it is assessed in line with both national and local planning policy, and any comments from local residents are considered." Woolscote Hall was built in 1600s. It was owned by a number of families, including the Millards, for 340 years, and most recently the Stevens. In 1930s, the hall was given to the people of Lye and Woolscote by Ernest Stevens, who was a wealthy industrialist. According to historians, the name Woolscote derives from an Anglo-Saxon name. Records show the area was inhabited as early as 1282. Councillor Crumpton says he will be open to discuss other potential sites in Woolscote for the 5G mast. The new technology will allow for much faster mobile network for residents in the region. But the mast have not come without controversy. Alongside causing eyesore concerns, the masts have also been attacked over fake 5G coronavirus claims. In late April, the Express and Star reported 25 masts have been attacked around the West Midlands.
Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Housing is reminding residents of the ongoing need to be thoughtful towards their neighbours during the pandemic. Dudley Council has received an increase in the number of calls from people who are frustrated by noise nuisance from their neighbours, and this is adding to demand placed on the local authority's antisocial behaviour team. The government is continuing to issue guidance of social distancing to reduce the spread of coronavirus, which is naturally resulting in people spending far more time at home than they normally would. People with concerns are advised to speak to their neighbours in the first instance and to find an agreement on how best to live around one another during the restrictions. When a resolution cannot be found, the council's antisocial behaviour team is available to offer advice and support. Councillor Laura Taylor, Cabinet Member for Housing and Communities, said, "We are all spending much more time at home than we normally would, and with many people feeling anxious and uneasy, there has never been a more important time to be considerate of your neighbours. It is very important that residents continue to follow government guidance, such as not inviting others from outside their household over, and I would ask people to refrain from creating a noise nuisance for others who live nearby. Anyone who has concerns and has not been able to successfully resolve the issue with their neighbours themselves can contact our antisocial behaviour team for guidance and advice. More information can be found on the council's website, or for further information or advice, the antisocial behaviour team can be contacted through Dudley Council Plus on 0300 555 2345.
Lyndon Westwood Wright is loving his new trampoline after it was installed by a kind-hearted housing maintenance worker at Dudley Council. The 9-year-old cannot walk and is wheelchair-bound due to Weidemann-Steiner syndrome, a rare genetic disorder. Because the family have a sloping garden at their home on the Russell's Hall estate, the trampoline needed to be sunk deep into the ground to ensure its stability for Lyndon to use. Zena Westwood, Lyndon's mother, said, "I received a call from the council's children's disability team asking if there was anything they could do to help us as we're on the vulnerable list. I mentioned that we had this trampoline that I hadn't been able to put up, that it would be really beneficial for Lyndon's mental health and well-being. Because the garden is on a slope, he can't use his wheelchair, so if he goes out, he has to crawl. A few conversations happened, and this week a member of the housing team has been here to do it for us. I'm really grateful for it. I would like to thank everyone at the council for making it happen. It will allow Lyndon to spend more time out in the fresh air, and he is absolutely loving it." Council housing maintenance worker Simon Bowater completed the job this week while respecting social distancing guidelines, and the joy on Lyndon's face was there for all to see. Councillor Laura Taylor, Cabinet Member for Housing, Communities and Residence Welfare, said, "As a council, we are committed to doing all we can to help the most vulnerable people in our borough during these unprecedented times." This was a fantastic gesture from our housing team and from Simon in particular, and I hope Lyndon really enjoys the time on his new trampoline.
Wolverhampton Art Gallery has used its collections to create a digital exhibition while closed during lockdown. To the Sea, inspired by travel, showcases a selection of paintings and seascapes, including works by Edwin Butler Baylis and Bilston-born painter William Harold Dudley that will help you escape to the coast virtually. Dudley's art developed at the time when the influence of French Impressionism, the newly school of artists, and the plein air technique of working outside drew many painters to the ocean. He made regular visits to Polperry, Cornwall, depicting the village and coastlines in the celebrated series that formed part of the original collection at the Bilston Gallery. Previously exhibited under open skies, the new Life and Art of William Harold Dudley, 1892-1949, this display showcases Dudley's art once more, alongside rarely seen works from Wolverhampton Art Gallery's permanent collection. Also on display are oils and sketches from Baylis that revealed an alternative side to the poet-painter of the Black Country, as well as maritime studies by the renowned Cornish painter Alfred Wallace and voyageurist artist Edward Wadsworth, City of Wolverhampton's Council Cabinet Member for City Economy, Councillor Harman Banger, said, "We understand that art is an escape for most, so I am glad to see that we are working in a new way to ensure our collection is still reaching those who have an interest in art. We recognise our visitors are missing our cultural venues, but we hope that through the digital platforms we can still inspire people and make art accessible. Over recent months, many of us have had to change our holiday plans, and so we hope this selection of artwork will help people escape to the coast, virtually at least. To view the collection, visit www.wolverhamptonart.org.uk/to the sea.
Wolverhampton Railway Station's new look was revealed to passengers as it opened to the public. The first stage of the £150 million upgrade of the city's train station has been completed as work to knock down the existing outdated building starts from this week. Officials admitted in all likelihood the train station would see fewer passengers initially, with many people observing the lockdown. 6 ticket vending machines, new British Transport Police area, toilets and baby changing facilities have been created, along with 3 shops ready to be fitted out and train crew accommodation. Due to coronavirus social distancing measures, a one-way system has been marked out at the station for people to follow, and customers are being encouraged to buy their tickets online in advance if possible. Phase 2 of the programme will see the demolition of the current station building and completion of the new build to house 3 more retail units, as well as a customer waiting room and help point. The pedestrian subways at the rear of the station will remain closed until Phase 2 has been completed, with a temporary pedestrian diversion route already in place via Wensfield Road. The new station building will be fully open in early 2021.
Thanks, Ian. Our final local news roundup to follow, but now our regular Talking Book review with Talking Book Steve.
Hi everybody, welcome to this week's audiobook review section of the Beacon Black Country Talking newspaper, with me, Stephen Terry. This week I thought we'd take a listen to Travels with Charlie by the fabulous John Steinbeck of Mice and Men Success. The book, narrated by Peter Marinker, lasts about 8.5 hours, so should keep you occupied for a little while during lockdown. Anyhow, so this book, Believing That a Good, Interesting Life is Marked by Quality, Not Quantity, John Steinbeck himself took note of his itchy feet and prepared to get travelling. He was accompanied by his French poodle, Charlie, the diplomat and watchdog, on their travels across the United States of America from Maine to California. What a pair, eh? So, moving through woods and forests, dirt tracks and highways to large cities and wilderness, Steinbeck observed America and the Americans with a humorous and sometimes sceptical eye. What he sees is a lonely, generous nation, too packed with individuals for single judgment. His vision of how the world was changing, however, speaks to us warningly and prophetically through the decades. A great listen. I would implore you to give this one a try. I'm a big fan of John Steinbeck. He's probably one of my favourite writers, and the book was beautifully narrated. So, yeah, give it a try. And as always, let us know what you think, and do let us know if you have any requests for reviews, and we'll get them featured in forthcoming Talking Newspaper. Take care, everyone, and stay safe.
Thanks, Steve. Now with our final local news roundup, it's Ian.
As cycling becomes more popular amid the pandemic, could the Black Country become a Yamsterdam? That is the vision being laid before us as the UK government prepares for life in post-lockdown. A £2 billion grant has been set aside for councils to install miles of pop-up cycling lanes across the country. It follows unprecedented levels of cycling in Britain, which has been fuelled by the government's tight travel restrictions over COVID-19. This prolonged period of lockdown has also allowed people to reassess their lifestyles and daily habits. Now the government is aiming to capitalise on this sudden shift in public mood. The government recently announced its package for councils to install emergency bike lanes across the country. The move was welcomed by Black Country Council leaders who are keen to improve cycling infrastructure on our congested road. Wolverhampton Council leader Ian Brookfield said, "We don't just want pop-up lanes, we want permanent lanes, thank you very much." In Dudley, the council is looking at establishing new cycling routes along old canal towpaths, disused railway lines, parks and green spaces. Sandwell Council is also looking to its canal network in a bid to establish cycling routes. Routes are particularly being looked at around the £50 million aquatic centre in Smethwick, which will hold events in the 2022 Birmingham Commonwealth Games. But while the government's initiative will be welcomed by many, the UK still falls behind its European counterparts in terms of cycling infrastructure. In Amsterdam, Holland, there are 320 miles of cycle lanes. The city is usually ranked the world's second most bike-friendly, just behind Copenhagen in Denmark. In comparison, it is said the largest cycling network in any British city is Birmingham, due to its 100-mile canal network. Charity Cycling UK has called for new pop-up lanes to be installed in the second city. The organisation says a mere 100 miles of pop-up lanes across 10 English cities would allow millions of people to cycle safely every day.
Council bosses are still deciding whether bonfires will go ahead in the Black Country. It comes after Dudley Council decided to cancel Himley Bonfire 6 months before it takes place in November. Wolverhampton and Sandwell councils are keeping the situation over coronavirus under review. Dudley councillor Ian Kettle, cabinet member responsible for halls, said the people's safety must be put first. Sandwell Council usually holds its bonfire at Dartmouth Park in West Bromwich. Councillor Maria Crompton, deputy leader of Sandwell Council, said, "No decision has been taken about the bonfire. The situation is, of course, under constant review." In Wolverhampton, the city's council usually holds the bonfire at Wolverhampton Racecourse. A spokesman for Wolverhampton Council said, "No decision has been made yet on whether the bonfire will take place in Wolverhampton." The City of Wolverhampton Council and Wolverhampton Racecourse will be reviewing the position in relation to the most up-to-date government guidance later this year.
Dudley Council's health chief is urging anyone experiencing coronavirus symptoms to get tested after the eligibility criteria was extended. Up until recently, only essential workers, over 65s, and those who could not work from home, such as construction workers, were eligible for the test. However, the government has this week confirmed, as part of its plan to to extend testing capacity to anyone aged 5 and above and showing symptoms can receive the swab test. People can register for the test online at www.nhs.uk/coronavirus. Anyone who does not have access to the internet or has difficulty using digital services can now call a new 119 service to book their test. Symptoms include high temperature, where a person feels hot to touch on their chest or back, a new continuous cough, where a person is coughing repeatedly, and now, in addition, a loss or a change in their sense of smell or taste. Anyone with symptoms should self-isolate along with members of household. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Cabinet Member for Health and Social Care, said, "With the testing capacity being extended, it's really important for eligible people get tested as soon as possible to help us map and control the spread of the infection as we move through this crisis. I'm also really pleased to see a new dedicated telephone number being set up for those who are unable to access online services. Please only use this service if you really need to. Testing is most effective within 1 to 3 days of symptoms developing and should be carried out in the first 5 days. The test involves taking a swab of the inside of the nose and the back of the throat using a long cotton bud. It tests if someone currently has coronavirus. The latest information and guidance around coronavirus is available at www.gov.uk/coronavirus and on the Council's coronavirus pages at www.dudley.gov.uk/coronavirus.
People were turned away as large crowds flocked to parks amid the scorching late spring sunshine to escape the long weeks in lockdown. Officials were forced to refuse entry to some visitors arriving after car parks filled quickly amid continued social distancing measures at the grounds of Himley Hall. Temperatures hit a year high of 27 degrees centigrade, 81 degrees Fahrenheit on Wednesday, with some parts of the country seeing warmer weather than Ibiza. Dudley Council says numbers will continue to be monitored at Himley and other parks to ensure social distancing is adhered to. Council Cabinet Member Councillor Ian Kettle said, "The very warm weather inevitably brings more people to Himley than usual, and we have seen numbers well above normal levels. As a result, we were not able to accommodate the high number of cars and some had to be turned away. If people are visiting Himley, it is crucial that they follow social distancing rules, and on occasions it is absolutely necessary to limit people coming into the park to make sure this happens. Thankfully, people are generally following the expert advice when visiting Himley, which allows us to keep this fantastic park open for everyone to enjoy. Dozens of people ventured to Himley Park, some taking along picnics while others queued for treats from an ice cream van to help them cool off. Signs have been displayed throughout the park and car parks to remind people to respect social distancing advice while visiting."
It runs in the family. Blind Dave Healy has been putting his best foot forward despite the lockdown with the help of his daughters. The West Bromwich Charity Champions regular guide, Tony Ellis, travelled from Shrewsbury to go on training runs daily. But with lockdown rules banning people from different households from mixing, the pair had to scrap plans for their runs. This left Dave in a quandary as he needs a guide runner to help him keep in shape for his charity exploits. Thankfully, his daughters, sixth form student Danny, aged 17, and 18-year-old university student Georgie Lee, stepped in to help. They hold one end of a running cord while Dave holds the other, and they lead him, including past any potential hazards like curbs and potholes. "It is no mean feat guiding, and especially at their age," he said. "They've done well as it takes some concentration, and they've really helped me. We did a first run round and got to about a mile and they said they enjoyed that. We've now got up to 5 miles and they are well chuffed." As an added incentive, the team behind the Great Birmingham Run, which was cancelled amid the outbreak, said they would give out medals to those still competing a 10k distance. "They are loving it. Now they're saying, 'Come on, Dad, we're going for a run tonight,'" he said. "We're running and talking and having a laugh, And even though I can't see, it's the enjoyment of being outside and the uneven footpath and the thrill of it. The 62-year-old is also an ambassador for Move More Sandwell, a project to encourage people to be active, especially during the lockdown. And to help raise awareness, Dave, who's raised £3 million for charity over the years, set up a mini fun triathlon in his back garden to celebrate it. It came as the huge West Brom fan should have been staging his next charity challenge, Escape from Colditz, last month. Dave would have been riding a tandem bike 800 miles from the former prisoner of war camp in Germany to the Hawthorns to raise money for the Albion Foundation. It took us 18 months to organise and we've had to cancel everything, but luckily, as they would be, people have been very understanding, said Dave. But now that has been put back until next year, with Dave unsure he will feature at charity or speaking events until towards the end of this year. Dave is also hoping to soon have news on a new guide dog after his dog, Seamus, died on Christmas Day last year.
Thanks, Christine. Now for our sight loss section with Pete.
This week, I thought we'd have a look at blind football. It's a game similar in pace and intensity to the one played by sighted teams, with players demonstrating the same skills, passion and fitness, but the rules are slightly different. Predominantly, blind football is played outdoors, usually on an artificial turf, to allow for improved acoustics, enabling blind footballers to hear better. There are five players rather than 11, four blind outfield players and a sighted goalkeeper. All outfield players must wear an eye patch and eye shades to ensure a level playing field, as some players may have a little light or shadow perception. The ball contains loose ball bearings, so it's audible, so when it rattles it moves, allowing the players to locate it during the game. Players learn to keep the ball close and perfectly controlled as they dribble across the pitch, only letting it away from their feet and when ready to pass to a teammate or take a shot. Concentration is key because, as well as hearing the ball, they're guided by voices of other players as they pass the ball. In blind football, coaches play a vital part. During the game, a coach will stand behind the attacking goal, directing the forward players, and another coach stands on the sideline and instructs midfield players, while the sighted goalkeeper will help organise the defence. Now, if there's a penalty, the attacking coach will tap both the vertical posts and crossbar so that the player taking the penalty will know where to place it. Teams are permitted to commit 5 fouls per half, and then an 8-metre penalty is awarded for each one thereafter. Specially designed acoustic boards are around the pitch to create an echo that allows the players to determine their own positions, sometimes by clicking their fingers, and to locate each other and the ball as it goes in and out of play. The boards also allow for a more flowing rhythm of play by avoiding continuous throw-ins. Now, all players must shout the word "voi" when in defence situations. This allows the attacking player to know the position of the defender. A pitch in blind football is 42 metres maximum and 38 metres minimum in length, and 22 metres maximum and 18 metres minimum in width. The game also differs in another way from sighted football. During play, spectators must remain silent in order to allow the players to hear the ball clearly, and the playing area will often be uncovered to allow for optimum acoustics. A player has to learn how to run, stop and start again, and to change direction with or without the ball. Without these crucial skills, they will be in danger of injuring themselves and others. Whew, well, that's blind football. But did you know there are two versions of the game, blind football and partially sighted football, with slightly different rules, one being blind football is played mainly outdoors, with partially sighted football indoors, with sight loss levels different for each game and a variation from domestic to international level. Sight loss being categorised from levels B1 to B4, with B1 being the most sight loss and B4 the least.
Thanks, Pete. There's more sight loss information coming up next week, but now with the answers to our quiz and this week's flashback section, it's Roger.
This is our flashback section, where we look at events that happened this week in history and where you will find the answers to the quiz questions set earlier. On the 25th of May 1977, the original Star Wars movie, Episode 4, A New Hope, directed by George Lucas and starring Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford, was first released. In 1878, on the same day, W.S. Gilbert and Arthur Sullivan's comic opera, HMS Pinafore, premiered in London, which was their first international success. In 1927, on May the 26th, Henry Ford and the Ford Motor Company made the last Model T Tin Lizzy car. There were 15 million produced between 1913 and 1927, and the price then was $300, that's 75 quid in English money. And, of course, you could have had any colour as long as it was black. Why? You well will ask. Well, it was because black was the only colour at that time which dried fast enough for Henry Ford's mass production line. Then in 1967, on May the 26th, EMI released Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. It would go to number one for 15 weeks in the US and 22 weeks in the UK. Crikey, you know, that's 53 years ago, and I queued outside the record shop with my 32 and 6 in my sticky little fist for a copy of the latest Beatles album. And I've still got it. 1940, May the 27th, the British and Allied forces begin the evacuation of Dunkirk, and it was called Operation Dynamo. May the 29th, 1942, Bing Crosby records White Christmas, the world's best-selling single, and they've estimated 100 million copies have been sold. A bit later on the May the 30th, but in 1987, North American Philips Company unveils a compact disc for video, or as we know it now, a DVD. And what films are available on that now? Here's the very first. On May the 31st in 1919, the first wedding ever held in an aircraft was flying over Houston, Texas. I don't suppose there were many guests at that one, though. Good luck with the quiz this week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Roger. Now, who remembers the Goodyear airship floating in the skies above the Black Country? To tell us more and to recall the story, here's Pete.
Now, this week, I spotted an article in the Express and Star, and it reminded me of years ago when I lived at home with my mum and dad, and there was this whirring noise, like a helicopter above the house. So I ran into the garden and I looked up, and floating above the house was the Goodyear airship. And magnificent sight. And so this article just cropped up, so I thought I'd share it with you. It was in the Express and Star. So 40 years ago, Julie and Steve Harris won a trip of a lifetime on the Goodyear airship Europa, same one that went over our house. The couple from Pensnet scooped the prize at the annual Wolverhampton Press Ball, which raised cash for various charities. Now, back in 1980, the £1.25 million blimp was a familiar shape in the West Midlands skies, making a number of visits and flying from the RAF Cosford Air Base. And the name Goodyear was synonymous with Wolverhampton as the city's biggest employer and the place where fathers and sons worked side by side, making tyres for cars, trucks, tractors and Formula One racing teams. Now, the great appeal of the airships were their sedate glamour, and they also allowed superb aerial coverage of sporting events such as the British Grand Prix and the FA Cup final at Wembley. When Goodyear Airship Europa was launched from Cardington in Bedfordshire in 1972, this was planned to be one of its uses. It had been constructed after the Goodyear Corporation initiated a $5 million expansion programme for its airship operation. Goodyear blimps first graced the skies in 1925, and a decision was made in 1971 that a new ship was needed for public relations operations based in Europe. Stationed just outside Rome, it was to be the fourth in a new fleet, with the others being based in Houston, Los Angeles, and Miami. Components for the new ship were created in Akron, Ohio, the base of Goodyear operations for many decades, and flown over to Cardington to be assembled. The first test flight proved unsuccessful after the ship tore away from its mast and the envelope deflated. And after repairs and further tests were carried out, it was finally ready to be launched, and among its first official duties was coverage of the Munich Olympics in 1972. The airship carried 6 passengers and had a top speed of 50 miles an hour and a maximum flying height of 7,500 feet. During its flights, Europa became known for flashing messages for good causes from the lighted sign belt around her length. And according to the Airship Heritage Trust, by January 1975, the Europa had flown some 4,000 hours and carried more than 20,000 passengers since its first flight. It was used for many private commissions, including being an aerial TV platform for the wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer in 1981. In 1986, it returned to the UK for a summer tour of the country, and part of the visit was spent at Birmingham International Airport, when invited guests, including a number of civic dignitaries, enjoyed a special flight. Among the events visited by the airship were the FA Cup final at Wembley on May the 10th and the Wimbledon Tennis Championships at the end of June. During its busy summer, Europa also visited the British Grand Prix at Brands Hatch on July the 13th, where it provided the aerial TV camera platform and the wedding of Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson at Westminster Abbey on July the 23rd. But in November 1986, Goodyear announced plans to retire the Europa, its aerial ambassador, and sell the airship's base in Capena near Rome to save costs. Unfortunately, Europa wasn't to have a quiet retirement. The Airship Heritage Trust reports that the same year the ship was chartered by the BBC for wildlife filming in the Camargue region of southern France. And during this time, the ship was caught by a downdraft in freak torrential rain and driven onto the marshes and wrecked. The ship was eventually recovered and the Europa control car and envelope deflated were returned to Akron, Ohio, and placed into storage. The Trust says that the airship never dies, as they have a tendency to be reused. The Europa control car was rebuilt over a period of years. In 1998, it was returned to its service on a new ship called Stars and Stripes, Goodyear model N1A. But the Airship Heritage Trust said Europa will always be seen as the return of lighter-than-aircraft to the UK. Today, Goodyear's fleet of modern airships are still going strong, and it has bases in Akron, Ohio, Pompano Beach, Florida, and Carson, California. The blimps include Wingfoot 1, which was launched in 2014 and has provided aerial coverage of numerous events, including the NBA Finals, the Daytona 500, the Stanley Cup Finals, and the PGA Championship. But I still remember Europa flying over my house.
Thanks, Pete. What a great story and piece of history. Even me, as a 24-year-old, can remember the Goodyear airship across the skies here in the Black Country. You know, if you missed them earlier, let's go through all the answers to the quiz with Mina.
Remember, all our questions are based on events that happened on this week in history. So here we go. Question 1. What movie came out in May 1977? Heralding a new series of worldwide space epics? The answer, the original Star Wars, made by George Lucas and starring Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia and Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker. Question 2. What was the name of the famous operation made up of British small ships which went to Dunkirk to evacuate our troops in 1940? The answer is Operation Dynamo. Hailed as a miracle of bravery, an organisation never before seen or equaled since. Question 3. In what year was the Beatles' album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band released? Answer is 1967, in the Flower Power, Peace and Love era, or so I'm told. Question 4. In 1878, a comic opera by Gilbert and Sullivan premiered in London. Can you name the ship in the opera's title? The answer is HMS Pinafore. Critics said the show would sink, but it sails on and is still showing somewhere in the world today. Question 5. What is the title of Bing Crosby's famous Yuletide song that he made in 1942? The answer is White Christmas. And I bet there ain't many of us who haven't sung that one every December. Question 6. In what year were DVDs first unveiled in America? Answer, 1987, invented by Philips and originally called the compact disc video, and incidentally, they were bigger than a dinner plate.
Thanks, Mina. Did you get them all then? Nope. Me neither. Anyway, we've got another brain teaser on the way for you shortly to test you again. But first, could there be more sunny weather on the way across the region? Here's Mina again to tell us.
The sunrise and sunset times for this week ahead are sunrise 4:52 a.m. and sunset at 21:20 p.m. Now that's more daylight again this week and more sunny weather by the looks of things for the weekend as we head into June next week. On Friday 29th of May, we're looking at sunny intervals with a gentle breeze and a maximum temperature of 23 degrees. Saturday 30th of May, we have more sun with a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 24 degrees. Sunday 31st of May, we have sunny intervals with a moderate breeze and a maximum temperature of 24 degrees. Now, as we move on into June, Monday 1st of June, we have sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 22 degrees. Now, Tuesday 2nd of June, we have sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 23 degrees. Moving on to Wednesday 3rd of June, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 23 degrees. And finally, on Thursday 4th of June, we finish with sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. Enjoy the sun.
Thanks, Mina. Time now for our regular update from Beacon with a new voice this week too. Please welcome Sophie.
Hello, everyone. I hope you've had a lovely bank holiday weekend. The weather was beautiful. Even though lockdown restrictions continue, I hope you manage to open your windows to let some fresh air in, or even manage to potter about in the garden. With so much going on in the world at the moment, it is at times like these it is nice to remember all of the good things we have going on. Each week, neighbours come together to clap for carers and show their appreciation for frontline workers. We've heard frying pans clanging, children screaming, and even fireworks set off as a symbol of appreciation. The community surrounding the Beacon Centre has been no different. As you have heard, as a charity, we are losing around £25,000 per week. The generosity shown by our members, staff, volunteer and neighbours has been brilliant. Over £7,000 has been donated since we launched our Beacon Crisis Appeal in April. Local companies such as Forward Industrial have donated much needed personal protective equipment, including masks and gloves. Supporters have even made scrubs and wash bags in beautifully bright pattern material for our care team to use when working. We have made it our mission to say thank you to every donation we receive, no matter how big or small. We've been writing emails, sending certificates, and even thanked people on social media by running Thank You Thursdays. A very popular highlight of our week is the Beacon of Hope, where we post on Facebook and Twitter a post thanking people who have specifically gone above and beyond. We started with the wonderful story of Callum, a paperboy to the Beacon Centre residents, who posted a note through each door with his mobile number on, asking people to contact them if they needed help with shopping, and also donated Easter eggs for the residents to enjoy. We have also written about a local bakery, Toffee Nose Cakes, who are struggling to survive, but still donated 50 of the most perfect miniature Victoria sponge cakes you have ever seen. We celebrated the beautiful Wyn on VE Day, who during the war was one of the first Wrens to be based in Londonderry. Our army of volunteers and care workers who have gone above and beyond, and our supporter Tim, who has walked 30 minutes every day throughout lockdown to raise money for Beacon. Beacon Centre for the Blind are very lucky to have built our own community to surround and help us. We hope to be around for many years to come. Next week, we will be celebrating a very important week to us. Next week, we will be celebrating National Volunteer Week.
Thanks, Sophie. And thank you for listening to this week's Black Country Talking News. If you'd like to contribute to the Talking News with a poem, sight loss tip you'd like to pass on to others, a happy birthday message, or just say hello, then please get in touch by emailing bctn@beaconvision.org or calling Beacon on 01902 880111. Have a good week, stay safe, and we'll be back next week to do it all again. Let's finish off now with this week's brain teaser from Pete Tara.
And finally for this week, we have a bit of a brain teaser for you. See if we can outfox you. So what do you think of this? You ready? I am an odd number. Take away one letter and I become even. What number am I? So hold on a second. I am an odd number. Take away one letter and I become even. What number am I? Well, I don't know. I tell you what, we'll give you the answer at the start of next week's Black Country Talking News. Cue Simon.
So that's it for another edition of Black Country Talking News. If you would like to contact us, you can do so by calling us on 01902 880111, emailing us at bctn@beaconvision.org, or send a letter to Black Country Talking News, Beacon Centre, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers, who without their support we'd be unable to run this free service. So it's goodbye from all of us, and please note that the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News, and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods or services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors.